If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
This is your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live to 2A Radio. Hey, couple of things going on that we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the shooting at Alabama University from a whack job goofball professor. We're going to go into a little bit of information history on that, as well as a fantastic case coming out in King County, Washington. That's where Seattle is. Seattle is in King County, Washington, actually my birthplace up there. And it has to do with the citywide ban in city parks and a couple other areas that was put into place through an executive order by the outgoing former mayor, Greg Nichols, anti-gun scuzzball. So we have a couple of those things going on. I am broadcasting live from L.A. I'm in Los Angeles doing several things, all kinds of appointments, getting a whole bunch of stuff done, business-related stuff, things that will actually help out the show here, a number of things I can't really get into now because there are a lot of stuff going on in development. Additionally, working on securing a range. You may remember sometime in November, did a live broadcast with special guest Shalene Nightingale. Shalene is one of the candidates for governor of California. Very conservative-minded woman, very pro-Second Amendment, very pro-getting the whole socialist aspect of free health care and free food and free housing and free everything to illegal immigrants finished and done with, and getting the financial aspect of the state of California back on track. Well, during the show live, I offered for Shalene for her campaign to get together with a Southern California range and to host a 1 or 2 day defensive handgun course. I would come out there on my own. I would get together some qualified instructors to come with me. And as a fundraiser for Shalene's campaign, we would do a 1 or 2 day, up to them and up to the range, sometime over a weekend, a defensive handgun course. Well, that's being set into motion. That should go down sometime in April, probably later April, maybe early May. So we're here working on that with some ranges as well. A lot of good things going on. Please remember, we're still doing a pledge drive here at RBI, and I'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the show. But we are doing the pledge drive. You can go on to republicbroadcasting.org. You can read some of the headlines about what's going on. You can also make a donation to RBN as well as go to the online store. Lots of cool stuff in the online store. So just stay tuned, guys. There's a lot of stuff coming down today on the show, and I'm happy to be doing it here from L.A., even though my gun rights are restricted, like the rest of the Californians here. But it's a nice town, and I enjoy it here. So stay tuned. Plenty to come right here, live, with your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443. me rambling on and babbling and slamming the former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nickels. Now, this guy was such a sorry-ass mayor, such a poor excuse for an elected official, that when it came time for re-election, he lost in the primary. Didn't even make it to the general election. So last August, he knew he was done with. Total turkey. Kept wanting to pass legislation, some sort of municipal code in Seattle, banning guns in all kinds of places. Even though in the state of Washington there is a preemption law, meaning that no county, city, or township can pass any firearms legislation, laws, provisions, municipal codes, town ordinances, whatever, that restrict the right to keep and bear arms, carry guns, have them anywhere, anything more restrictive than the state level. Only the state is allowed to pass any sort of firearms-related legislation. Well, in Seattle, Greg Nickels tried several times unsuccessfully to even get the somewhat liberal city council to go along with his anti-gun rhetoric and pass some city ordinances banning the carrying of guns. Well, it didn't work out. So after this scumbag Nickels was ousted, he was a lame duck mayor. What he did was he wrote an executive order from the mayor's desk banning guns in places like city parks. An executive order. Something completely illegal. Completely against the wish of the people. Completely against the laws of the state. Even having been advised so by the Attorney General of the state of Washington. So, we ended up with lawsuits being filed in this case against this sort of ban. Well, a King County, Washington Superior Court judge, he threw out a couple of haymakers into a ruling that strikes down the Seattle's illegal ban on guns in city parks, granting not only a summary judgment requested from the plaintiffs, but also issuing a permanent injunction against the city, which also now has 30 days to remove signs from some 500 different places and facilities. And the injunction takes place February 17th, tomorrow. Now, the lawsuit was filed by the Bellevue-based Second Amendment Foundation. You heard me talk about it quite a bit. And also its sister organization, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, plus the NRA. Now, the Washington Arms Collectors and five individual plaintiffs were actually the ones who filed the suit. The suit was filed on their behalf. So, Judge Catherine Schaefer, she didn't mince any words at all in her order, part of which was handwritten and issued from the bench following an afternoon of hearings in her courtroom in Seattle. She says this: "The court finds that the plaintiffs have a clear legal or equitable right to carry firearms under the federal and state constitutions." That's what she said in her ruling from the bench. She also noted that, quote, "The court finds that there is no genuine issue of material fact on which reasonable minds could differ." Meaning, in short order, that former Mayor Greg Nickels was off his rocker. To everyone's surprise, she also mentioned that the landmark Heller ruling against the District of Columbia's handgun ban that found that the Second Amendment was protective of an individual civil right, an issue that's never before been brought up in the NAF or NRA legal argument. She dissected and individually demolished the city's legal arguments to keeping the ban. And the city is weighing its options, what it has, over the next 30 days to appeal. Now, we all knew that this thing was going to go down. I've been talking about this since it first came out months ago. We knew it was going to go down. And the cash-strapped city of Seattle realized that they were going to have some sort of a fight on their hands, and it was going to cost taxpayer money, municipal funds, to fight this really off-base, left-wing attempt by the mayor at the time, now former mayor, to take guns out of the hands of citizens in city parks and a few other locations. Now, Judge Schaefer's ruling ends 18 months of legal wrangling, most of it in the court of public opinion, before the lawsuit was actually filed just this last fall. A second lawsuit, this one filed in federal district court by a man named Robert Warden, is still pending. Incredibly, one of the city's major news agencies initially reported incorrectly that Warden's lawsuit had been won. Now, Warden's lawsuit has nothing to do with the ruling just this last Friday. And then later Friday, that particular news organization, they did correct it. But that case is still in the hands of a federal court. I don't know if it's going to do much good now, because he was fighting for the same thing that they were fighting for in the state court, and they just won. Hands friggin' down won. Now, there's one surprise in the judge's ruling, however. She found that the Second Amendment Foundation, NRA, WEC, all lacked standing as organizations, but the individual plaintiffs did have standings. She dismissed the organizational claims with prejudice. So she didn't take the pro-Second Amendment groups into account and ruled solely on the individuals who named the suit against the city of Seattle. So Second Amendment Foundation Executive Vice President Alan Gottlieb accepted that part of the ruling, noting that in a telephone conversation that the important thing is that, quote, we won. Well, of course. He issued a statement to the press following Judge Schaefer's ruling. He says, this is a critical victory for gun rights advocates for several reasons. First, it solidifies the state's Model Preemption Act, adopted more than 25 years ago, and strengthened 2 years later. Had Washington's preemption law essentially been gutted by this case, it could have had implications for preemption statutes in other cases. So, here is I'm not going to read it. I was going to read to you the state preemption law. Who cares? It's boring radio. Anyhow, second, the ruling puts other local government and entities in Washington on notice, specifically Snohomish County, where the Democrat-dominated county council last month brushed aside an opportunity to repeal a 30-year-old ordinance banning guns in county parks, that they must now comply with state law. Now, Democrats on the council cavalry ignored the state preemption statute, instead choosing to, quote, wait and see about what happens with the Seattle case. Well, now they know. Third point, the ruling is one more slap in the face to former Mayor Greg Nickels, who just arrogantly pushed the gun ban, insisting that the city had the right to regulate guns on park property as well as where it has other private property areas. Now, the city obviously has no say in what happens on private property areas. Now, Nickels, who is a vehement anti-gunner, he's now spreading his new view of government to the fertile minds of students at Harvard. So, you take an anti-gun guy that's in politics, he loses re-election because he sucks, and Harvard gives him a job. Wonderful. Nickels' arrogance and inability to deal with last winter's snow crisis cost him the mayor's race during the August primary, along with his anti-gun ideals. Now, that was a political rout. Nickels came in third behind two political newcomers, signaling that even in a far-left liberal Seattle, people can eventually get their fill of this kind of horrible politics. Now, the ruling puts others of Nickels' ilk on notice that they're going to fare very poorly when they defy state statutes. Perhaps what's the most disturbing about this is that the Second Amendment Foundation and NRA, and specifically Alan Gottlieb, gave the city numerous chances to back out of the effort gracefully, even before a lawsuit was filed. But no. They ended up taking city money and going to court with it. Now, here's a quote from Kathy Mundlace, the Seattle Attorney's Office. She says, We will comply with the court order, and we are weighing with our clients the option for an appeal. Now, that's the city attorney's office. Her client is her employer. Anyhow, don't expect much coming out of that. I am just absolutely tickled pink, absolutely pleased that this went the way that it did. For Greg Nichols to just randomly sign off on an executive, who does he think he is? I have serious, serious reservations about executive orders to begin with. I know that the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled in certain areas on executive orders out of the president, but I really doubt the founding fathers would have found any legitimate legalities or constitutionality of any executive order out of the president, let alone a mayor. For a mayor to take and just with a stroke of his pen say, we couldn't pass it by law, but I'm going to do this. It's reminiscent of the State of the Union speech that Obama gave just a couple of weeks ago, saying that if they couldn't get something done through the legislature, through Congress, he was just going to do it by executive order. What a scumbag. Anyhow, I'm sure he'll get his when it comes to re-election. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearm to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, welcome back. Well, you know, we all had high hopes for the Second Amendment March when it was announced about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that. The idea was to get as many people as possible, if possible a million gun owners, to march on Washington and let them know, look, we've had it with the abuse of our Second Amendment rights, for that matter, the abuse of all of our rights, specifically our Second Amendment rights. And it's, you know, from a grandiose idea and promises made that this is what's really going to happen and really be the biggest thing, it's really compromised. It's been very, very compromised. Here's some ideas for you. First of all, it's not going to be a march at all. It's going to happen. I'll give you this. It's going to happen April 19th, 2010. In addition to being in Washington, D.C., there are supposed to be other Second Amendment marches coordinated that same day in different areas around the country for those who either can't make it to D.C. or prefer to stay closer to home to march and demonstrate and let the let our voices be heard as Second Amendment Second Amendment protectors. So it's going to be from 6 hours long, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on April 19th. Of this year, and it's going to be at the northeast corner of the Washington Monument grounds, and that's where the entire event's going to take place. Due to other logistics, it's really going to be a rally as opposed to any kind of a march. Now, the event was really coordinated and put together by the Second Amendment March, whose stated mission is, quote, to galvanize the courage and resolve of Americans to petition our elected officials against establishing anti-gun legislation, and to remind America that the Second Amendment is necessary to maintain our rights to self-defense. Now, a couple of things that I see that Second Amendment March has really fallen short of. I was originally a very big supporter of this entire campaign and was making plans to go to D.C. for this march myself. Several things stopped me. Some of the speakers that they decided to have, other than real-life, conservative, true, red, white, and blue, red-blooded Americans, speaking the way that would, some way that would make the founding fathers proud, that a couple hundred years later, there are still people of the same mindset, the same belief, and the same ilk to carry on what the founding fathers started this wonderful country as, as opposed to all of the PC, goofy, leftist garbage, and bowing and curtailing to special interest. What really sold it to me was to not give a speaking spot to some of the known, and even some of the lesser known, but still very stringent, very strong, pro-rights, pro-Second Amendment individuals in this country. And one speaking spot is going to a pro-Second Amendment transgendered individual. Now, hey, I'm all for transgendered and transsexual people carrying out their Second Amendment rights. However, I'm not so sure that either of those groups is going to make up a very significant percentage of the, really the constituency, or the, really kind of the, I guess the pro-gun group that's going to be out there. As a matter of fact, considering the very, very staunch, basically Christian, very strong foundational principles that most Second Amendment people believe in, especially the kind of people that are go out of their way to go to their state capitals or the nation's capital for this event, you're probably going to be doing more damage having these highly specialized special interest groups up there speaking than you are not having them speak and having someone who is of the majority of the people there up there speaking. That's really kind of turning my stomach a little bit, that they're just, their mindset is so far off of the mainstream of American pro-gun rights groups and individuals. Additionally, there's going to be a rally and not a march, and on top of that, they say no guns allowed. No guns allowed. Okay, let me tell you something. Marching on Washington or having a rally in Washington does absolutely nothing but potentially disrupt traffic. The Million Mom March, you know, the African-American March. None of that did anything for these legislators, except for a few of them to stand up and say, okay, we recognize you here. If you have several thousand, 10, 20, 50, 100,000, maybe even a million or close to it, people in Washington, marching through Washington, all of them armed, let me tell you something. There's nothing that the police can do about it, and there is something that the legislators will actually take a look at. So if the Second Amendment march is going to say, we want you to talk about the Second Amendment, but we don't want you to practice it, that speaking out of both sides of your mouth, I'm not a fan. Anyhow, now you know how I feel about the Second Amendment march, and you know what's going on. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back. You know, we talk often about gun-free zones and how those end up being the main places where multiple homicides happen. Multiple is in like a mass shooting where there is three or more people killed, three or more people shot in one instance by someone who's a nut job. It almost always happens. It's got to be 90 to 95% of the time happens in what would be considered a gun-free zone. because that means a pro-victim zone to the bad guys, to the mentals that are out there committing these kinds of crimes. Now, places that you're most likely to see this happen, a government facility, a school or an educational area, be it a school, college, university, something like that, a place of education, and a workplace. Because generally, those three areas, you won't find any guns. You won't find any armed people. You won't find anyone allowed to exercise their inalienable right known as the Second Amendment. So, same thing happened last week. Amy Bishop, a professor, denied tenure, opened fire at a faculty meeting, shot and killed three colleagues because she was pissed off that she was not allowed tenure. This was her last semester. Now, I don't know if you've happened to see any pictures or video of this woman. She looks very odd. She acts very odd. And she speaks very oddly. Similar things have been said from people who actually knew her. Friends, family, colleagues, students have actually said she was pretty odd. Now, when someone is so odd they capture your attention, something like that should always indicate in the back of your head instability. It has for me many times when I've seen people who I believe are quite odd, and at some time or another experience one level or another of their instability, thus confirming that sixth sense. I think there's actually more than six. There's probably about 20. We just identify five as being very tangible. There's many more. Your subconscious, your that little voice in the back of your head, you know, the hair on the back of your, whatever you want to call it, that's really the one sense that you should be listening to most. You know, that little voice that says, yeah, maybe you should not do that. Well, you know, as I have progressed through life, it's gotten to the point where I used to just quell that little voice. Eh, shut up. I'll do it my way. Now, when I hear that little voice, you know, saying, yeah, maybe you should not actually a voice, but you know what I'm saying, I crank up the volume and I listen to it. Because for some reason or another, it seems to be right the vast majority of the time. Well, it also turns out that this professor, Amy Bishop, about 20 years ago, a little over that, shot and killed her brother in the suburbs of Boston. But funny enough, the records of it seem to be missing. This came out of the Boston police just this last Saturday. Now, it says that, let's see, Amy Bishop shot her brother in the chest in 1986, it says. So now we're actually talking 24 years ago. The Braintree, Massachusetts police chief, Paul Frazier, said that she fired at least three shots, hitting her brother once and hitting her bedroom wall, before police took her into custody at gunpoint. Now, before Bishop could be booked, however, the police chief back then called officers and told them to release her to her mother. The shooting of her brother, Seth Bishop, was logged as an accident, but detailed records of the shooting have disappeared. So, she fires at least three shots, one of them into the chest of her brother, killing him. Police take her into custody at gunpoint, and the police chief says release her to her mother. And now the report is gone, removed from the files. Who did her family know, I wonder? Now, the Harvard educated neurobiologist who became an assistant professor at the Alabama college that this all went down at in 2003 has been charged with capital murder, and other charges are said to be pending. Police said a 9mm handgun was found in a restroom in the science building on the University of Alabama's Huntsville campus where the shootings occurred Friday afternoon. She was taken Friday night in handcuffs to the county jail. and said, as she got into a police car, "It didn't happen. There's no way. They are still alive." Well, that's pretty kooky, because they weren't. Three of them are dead. District Attorney Ron Boschard said he didn't think that Bishop has a lawyer. Her husband, James Anderson, was detained and questioned on Friday, though he's not been charged. Ray Garner, a spokesman at the Huntsville campus, said Bishop had been denied tenure, a type of job protection that kind of is afforded for academics. She was denied tenure months ago, and this was going to be her last semester. Some have said the professor, who students said was bright but had a difficult time explaining more difficult concepts, opened fire because of a dispute over the issue of tenure. Students' assessments of Bishop varied. Some recalled an attentive, friendly teacher, while others said she was an odd woman who couldn't simplify difficult subjects for students. Sammy Lee Davis, the husband of a tenured researcher who was killed, said his wife had described Bishop as, quote, "not being able to deal with reality and not as good as she thought she was." Now, Davis said his wife was a tenured researcher at the university. In a brief phone interview, Davis said he was told his wife was at a meeting to discuss the tenure status of another faculty member who got angry and started shooting. Now, Davis's wife was among those who were killed, along with Gopi Padilla, chairman of the Biological Sciences Department, and another faculty member. Adriel Johnson, I guess is the name. Bishop had created a portable cell incubator, known as an InQ, that was less expensive than its larger counterparts. She and her husband had won $25,000 in 2007 to market the device. Andrea Bennett, a sophomore majoring in nursing and an athlete at the college, said her coach told her team that Bishop had been denied tenure, which the coach said may have led to the shooting. Bennett described Bishop as being very weird and a really big nerd. "She's well known on campus, but I wouldn't say she's a good teacher. I've heard a lot of complaints," Bennett said. "She's a genius, but she really just can't explain things." It was not clear if anyone at the campus of Bishop's brother knew anything. I'm sorry, at the campus knew anything about Bishop's brother's shooting. Okay. Didn't really think that they would. So, what we've got is a really goofy woman who stands out in a crowd as being odd. Just plain odd. And when you deny tenure to somebody who's odd and shows behavior of being unstable, you got to be careful. Even more so, you've got to be careful finding someone like this and allowing them into a position where later they might be harmful if things don't go their way. Now, everybody in academia wants to have tenure if they get to the college or university status. You know, an old saying, it's kind of funny, my father used to say it, and it got him into hot water at a dinner one time. He used to say, "Those who can do, those who can't do, teach." Now, we've all heard that. My dad's caveat was, "And those who can't teach, teach college." Well, he went so far as to say that at a meeting in the industry of his business. He was in the printing business, in mixed company with several people at a table. And as it turns out, the wife of one of the attendees, both of them there at the dinner, was a university professor. If I remember correctly, was actually head of her department and proceeded to rip my dad a new one. I wish I was there to have seen that, because see my dad get put in his place with his mouth, which sometimes overrunneth his backside, had to be just a classic moment. So anyhow, this woman seemed to be very odd, and she ended up taking things into her own hands now we mentioned government facilities, places of work, and places of education are the three areas which are predominantly no gun zones, right? Gun-free zones. Well, this was really two of the three. This was both an educational facility and a workplace, because the people that were the victims were co-workers on a university campus. So if one isn't bad enough, you end up having two. So you cannot rely on crazy people, goofballs, that grab guns and start shooting and killing people with them. That's going to happen. There's no way to eliminate all the guns in the world from planet Earth. Even if you could, you're now putting the life of the little old lady in the hands of the great big, young, huge, muscular guy that wants her purse. The gun is the great equalizer. They should be around. If they happen to get into the hands of crazies, which has always happened, and always will happen, it happened well before guns. You don't think back in Caesar's time that you didn't get some crazy guy or some crazy lady grabbing some sort of a dagger and hiding it under their toga and going and shanking somebody? I mean, look what happened to Caesar himself. Brutus and the boys ended up shanking Caesar. If Caesar had a blaster on him, he could have done these boys in. Could you imagine? Imagine if Caesar had a Glock, right? And you get Brutus and the boys taking their turns, shanking Caesar. Once he saw the first dagger or two coming at him, if he could have done some sort of a parry, stepped back, presented his Glock out from a concealed toga holster, and ended up laying one into the chest of everybody that had a drawn dagger, Caesar would have been fine. Imagine the headlines there. I mean, that would have been so cool. They would have gone through many sandstone tablets etching that one together for the day. By then they probably had parchment paper. They probably could have actually printed a few of those things out. I don't really know what the duplication technology was back in Caesar's day, back in the day when Brutus and the boys decided to start shanking the boss. Anyhow, you're always going to have crazies out there who are going to do something, be it with behind the wheel of a vehicle, be it with a gun, a knife, a baseball bat, an old standard non-electric typewriter, whatever it is. It's going to happen. When those crazies snap and they are hell-bent on causing death or serious bodily injury, the most efficient and effective means to stopping them is that with a gun, especially if they have a gun. I mean, guns can be used as deadly devices. They can be. Look at a Glock. We talked about Glocks for a minute. Look at a Glock. Gaston Glock did not design the Glock 17 pistol or any of its later models or calibers to be used as some sporting gun. He didn't design it to be used as some sort of a hunting gun. He designed it to be used as a defensive tool, and designed it to be a very simple, incredibly reliable tool to end up in the hands of every police officer and every person in every military across the globe as could be allowed, as well as in the hands of citizens of countries where their laws respected that right. He didn't design that gun to be a showpiece. The Glock series pistols is designed to be used as a defensive tool against, well, in our case for the Second Amendment, against crazies that are out there. All right? So if you come across a crazy who is about to take your life or inflict serious bodily injury to you or member, your family, loved one, or even just another innocent person in your vicinity, if you have a gun, you can stop them. You shoot them and stop them. If anybody at this meeting or anybody at this university in close proximity to this meeting had a gun, they could have stopped this woman. They could have stopped her before she took three lives. She still might have gotten one. Heck, she might have gotten two. She might have still gotten all three. But before she got out of there, she could have been stopped. Really? Stopping her before all three of these people were shot? Before they were dead? Would have been the responsibility of a responsible, law-abiding, gun-toting American. Somebody that doesn't leave their security and their safety to chance. Somebody that is not happy being in the realm of an area that is dubbed a gun-free zone. Gun-free zone means you are mandated while in this area of the gun-free zone, while you're in this zone, to be a victim if somebody chooses to make you one. All you need is one person to make that choice. And all the other dozens, hundreds, or even thousands of people in that same zone are at the whim of the one person who decided to make anyone in that area their victim. That's exactly what happened on this campus in Alabama. And it's unfortunate that three people are now dead from it. And what's probably going to happen? They'll be more restrictive. Stay tuned, guys.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. Look, I just want to remind everyone that at RBN we're having a pledge drive. And really, what we're doing, we're in the process of standing up another network. Another network. Let me get tongue-tied there. And that network is going to be the Elected Representatives Network, the ERN, where we're going to put on elected representatives from all across the country that are going to have regular shows, probably going to have some special shows here and there as things work out. So we're in the process of standing up that network. One of the reasons we're having the pledge drives to get that up there and get that out is some alternative programming to what we already have here on Republic Broadcasting. So if you'd like to donate to that, please, to the pledge drive, you can donate by calling 800-724-2719. Again, that's 800-724-2719. That's 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, all right, because we have the network is in Round Rock, Texas. You could also go online to republicbroadcasting.org and donate there. As well, you could also send in a pledge if you like. And that address is, let me pull it up here. It is 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. Again, 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's in Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. So we appreciate that when it comes to anything that you would be able to donate when it comes to the pledge drive. I actually designed some bumper stickers that I sent in, and hopefully, provided the network looks at it and say, okay, that's not too far out to the right. That's not so far out there. We'll be able to use those and maybe sell those as part of a pledge drive. Additionally, guys, you can get the 100 business cards, which are generic, as in they don't have a name, but they're good-looking cards. They're kind of a gloss finish. 100 business cards, plus you get an RBN bumper sticker and a copy of Aaron Russo's America, Freedom to Fascism for $8, and that includes shipping. So you get 100 cards, a bumper sticker, and a copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism for $8. So remember that. Remember the pledge drive, if you would please. And if you happen to feel like sending me any emails, you can go onto the website. The website is www.2aradio.com. That's not two-way radio. That is 2A, as in Second Amendment Radio.com. And my email address is real simple, guys. It's Bill at 2aradio.com. All right? So feel free to send me any sort of emails you like, comments on the show, anything that's going on. Please keep the forwards to yourself. Address it personally. I'm happy to read it, and if it's a question I can answer on the show, I will. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Lendman News Hour coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.
I will not break. I will show.